Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today is March 3rd, 2015. It's 6:30 p.m. We're at the Palm Coast Community Center for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. Would you please rise and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Ness.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor Councilmember DiLorenzo is excused.
Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes of the February 17th City Council meeting and the February 24th City Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, proclamation recognizing the month of March as Multiple Myeloma Awareness Month. Ms. Shipley?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
It's important. I want to thank Mayor Netz of the Palm Coast City Council for proclaiming March as Multiple Myeloma Month. Multiple myeloma is an incurable cancer of the plasma cells found in the bone marrow. I am thankful as a cancer advocate and a multiple myeloma patient to be addressing you in my third consecutive year. Each year I consider this as a milestone. Myeloma is increasing in number and it's becoming more common in younger people, with possible links to environmental toxins. Recently, myeloma was added to the list of cancers covered by the Zedroga Act that people were exposed to in 9/11. M&M, as I call it, is one of the leading cancers that the first responders have been diagnosed with. Also, through the IMF, we are reaching out to veterans who have been exposed to the Agent Orange. This is the cancer that Tom Brokoff has, also Pat Williams from the executives of Orlando Magic. Others were Geraldine Ferrara, Peter Boyle, who played the father in Raymond, and Sam Walton of Walmart, to name a few. Multiple myeloma is the oncogenic growth of the plasma cells in the bone marrow, which has led to the infections, bone lesions, compressions of vertebrae, osteoporosis, severe back pain, or kidney failure. Everyone has different symptoms. It could be as damaging as chromosomes, as in my case. Even though my initial symptoms were in 2011, I just had anemia. I was given 1 year to live. No two cases are the same. Presently, multiple myeloma is not curable. Patients are challenged with different symptoms most every time the disease returns. I have met several multiple myeloma residents dealing with the disease in Palm Coast and Flagler County. A year ago, the Palm Coast Multiple Myeloma Group was just established. Again, I want to express my appreciation for the proclamation. It is very important to me and others that multiple myeloma be a public awareness and it's a curable cancer. Most people have never heard of it. This is the prime reason for us to build awareness for this disease, as early detection will help people live longer through many treatment options, including chemotherapy, radiation, stem cell transplant, novel and emerging therapies, and through clinical trials. Thank you again for giving me this opportunity. I left some information in the back. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.
I'm just going to read this for you. Mm-hmm.
Whereas multiple myeloma, the second most common blood cancer worldwide and the fastest rising hematologic cancer, is a cancer of plasma cells in the bone marrow, it is called multiple because the cancer can occur at multiple sites, and whereas multiple myeloma currently affects an estimated 83,367 people in the United States, with an estimated 24,000 cases diagnosed each year, and 10,000 losing their battle each year. And whereas once a disease of the elderly is now being found in increasing numbers in people under 65, whereas because myeloma is a rare disease, there can be delayed diagnosis leading to delayed treatment. For this reason, an increased awareness of myeloma for clinicians and general public will lead to earlier diagnosis, allowing people to live longer. And whereas continued investment and innovation is critical to achieve early diagnosis and implement the most effective and safest treatments for myeloma patients, and whereas Although we have seen important advances in the last decade, there is still no cure for myeloma, and whereas the City of Palm Coast is committed to increasing awareness of myeloma and encouraging private efforts to enhance research, funding, and education programs, now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, that the month of March 2015 will be officially designated as Multiple Myeloma Awareness Month. And this is for you, and thank you for coming in and speaking, and thank you for our notices.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 3. Don't sit down, Ms. Shipley. If you and Mr. Nobile would join me at the podium.
You're carrying, aren't you?
Always. Some people think that winning the election is the end of a long journey. But as I'm sure as these two can tell you, it's actually the beginning of another journey, and these two have taken that first step. I'd like to read a letter from Lynn Tipton, who's the director of the Florida League of Cities University, and it's addressed to our two council members. And it reads, on behalf of the John Scott Daly Florida Institute of Government and the Florida League of Cities, I am pleased to award this certificate to you for the completion of 18 hours of instruction at the Institute for Elected Municipal Officials in Jacksonville, Florida, on January 23rd through the 25th of this year. It's our sincere hope that you found the program challenging, informative, and rewarding. Now that you have taken the basic EMO, we encourage you to attend the Advanced Institute as well as other Florida Cities University programs. You can find the dates and locations on our website. We strongly believe that your willingness to complete this program and study is indicative of your commitment to improving the quality of municipal government in Florida. We commend you for this, and we sincerely thank you. And signed, Lynn Tipton. I'd like to add congratulations. My behalf of your council, fellow council members, thank you for the beginning of another long journey. And again, just to comment on that, there is a tremendous amount to learn in Florida when you're dealing with legislative issues, as City Council does. And I'm very grateful that our two newest council members have taken the time to attend this special training. It will stand them in good stead, I'm sure. Agenda item number 4, an ordinance consolidating the provisions of the Volunteer Firefighters Retirement System. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance pertaining to the Volunteer Firefighter Retirement System and Trust Fund. It's an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, amending and restating Chapter 2, Administration, Article 6, Retirement, Division 2, Volunteer Firefighters Retirement System and Trust Fund, Sections 2526 through 2550, inclusive of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Palm Coast. It provides for definitions, membership, for a Board of Trustees, for finances and fund management. Provides for contributions, benefit amounts, and eligibility, for pre-retirement death benefits, for disability benefits, for vesting of benefits, providing optional forms of benefits for beneficiaries, claims procedures, reports for reports to the Division of Retirement, and for a roster of retirees. It provides for a maximum pension limitation for distribution of benefits, miscellaneous provisions, providing for repeal or termination of the system, and it provides for domestic relation orders, retiree directed payments, exemption from execution and non-assignability, providing for pension validity, providing for forfeiture of pension under certain circumstances, for conviction and forfeiture, false, misleading, or fraudulent statement, providing for indemnification and defense of claims, adding a supplemental benefit. It provides for severability of provisions, repealing all ordinances in conflict herewith, for codification and for an effective date. And, Mr. Mayor, I take no role in the drafting of this title.
One of the first things that Steve and Heidi learned at EMO is that, yes, you actually do have to read these things into the record. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is actually your second reading of this ordinance. You have seen the presentation a couple of times. We have nothing new to add. I would just like to say, though, that our fire department is a career-paid fire department, but it is supplemented by the volunteers. In fact, we're very fortunate to have a very strong volunteer membership. Lots of times when you see the fire police, those are all our volunteers. Many times you'll actually see a fire truck that you can't tell the difference, but they're actually trained volunteers working right beside our career paid firefighters. This proposal is something that is it's a pension plan. It's only for our volunteers. It's not for our paid firefighters. Our paid employees are on a defined contribution plan that is very similar to the private sector, not a pension plan. This is something that is funded by the state through a tax that they add to homeowners insurance. It is something we have no control over, and they're going to collect those dollars whether or not we have a pension plan for firefighters, and it has to be strictly for that purpose. So in this case, it's a really kind of a small token for our volunteers. It's fully funded. It is overfunded, if you will. It's not like your typical pension plan. It's like 130% funded. We have good reserves, and this change, all it does is basically make sure that we are up to date with state law, IRS code, and then also adds a shared program for when our reserves are high enough above policy that the volunteers, based on the amount of time and effort they put into, actually get to share in that those additional dollars. This kind of summarizes it. If you have questions, Chief Beadle and Chris Quinn, our finance director, is here to answer those. But we have no additional changes or information at this time.
Council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting from the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 4? If so, come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your contribution to 3 minutes. Seeing no one rushing to the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting, come back to council. Any questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nett?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 5, an ordinance related to comprehensive plan amendments based on the evaluation appraisal letter sent to the Department of Economic Opportunity. Mr. Reichman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the City of Palm Coast 2035 Comprehensive Plan as previously amended. This is pursuant to Chapter 163 of the Florida Statutes. This ordinance amends the following elements: future land use, transportation, public, recreation and open space, infrastructure, conservation and coastal management, intergovernmental coordination, capital improvements, public school facility, glossary, and the future land use map, to update policies and reflect changes to Florida Statutes Chapter 163 since the last update of the comprehensive plan in 2010, and updating the comprehensive plan to reflect best available data and changes in local conditions. This ordinance provides for conflicts, ratification of prior acts, codification, severability, and effective date.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is once again a second reading. You've seen the presentation on this item a couple times also, so I'll just state that this is actually a housekeeping item. It's something that's required by our state. It's a good thing. It requires us every 5 years to make sure that our comp plan is up to date with state laws and local conditions and information. City Council heard this first reading in December, We're then required to submit it to the state and get feedback from state agencies, which we have abided by the state law, and then we did get a couple of comments. So Jose is going to just do a quick overview of what the changes are as a result of state comments, fairly minor. And other than that, we had no additional information, no other comments, et cetera. So, Jose, please outline what the changes are from the first reading.
Sure thing. Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and members of City Council. As Mr. Landon mentioned, the proposed additional changes to the amendments are just based on comments we received from the state. And again, we had first reading in December, and we received comments from the state. So essentially, what the comments that are proposed to be made to the amendments that you saw are just really some clarification of some of those proposed changes in policies. One would be to the Exhibit 8.1 of the capital improvements element, where previously we were just trying to update the references to the Florida Highway Florida Highway Interstate System. DOT made a comment that term is really out of date, and we should use the term strategic intermodal system and state highway system instead of the Florida Interstate Highway System. And just suggested that maybe we want to outline what those facilities are, and we've done that as part of the policy. Two additional tweaks to policy, policy 8113 and 9117. When we wrote the previous policy, we just, our proposed policy was such that we would have considered that we would have just adopted the Flagler County School District work plan as adopted or as they approved it annually. The comments we got back is that that's really a self-amending amendment, which is not consistent with state statutes. And so we must specifically identify which document and identify when it was adopted and by whom. And so we need to do that just to make it consistent with state statutes. And finally, again, deleting the reference to the Florida Interstate Highway System. And one was just, again, we updated the definition of coastal high hazard area, and again, just making a reference that it is the 2013 Northeast Florida Regional Evacuation Study, which was released on June 20, 2014, that will be part of our definition of determining what the coastal high hazard area is. And then also they made a comment that we needed to update certain maps in the comprehensive plan. That's really not, that doesn't necessarily require a comprehensive plan amendment because they're not specific to land use for a particular property. And that's just an update based on additional data. And so with that, staff is recommending approval along with the proposed additional changes.
Council questions?
Just one, Your Honor. What if the council does not approve it?
Actually, you mean the whole package?
No,
or
I mean what you're presenting here.
I will say that these are comments. They weren't objections by the state. So they were friendly suggestions that in order to help you make your comprehensive plan more consistent with state statutes, you might want to consider these changes. But we tried to keep a good rapport with the review agencies, and we take their suggestions and recommendations and comments and review them, and we present to you that it is consistent and does not harm the city.
One question.
You started at section 8. What about all the changes prior? Did we already?
Although I'm only presenting the additional changes from state
from
comments.
This, okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I didn't want to go back and.
Gotcha.
Other question. For the benefit of the residents, there's a hierarchy of planning documents that all cities are required to have. At the 10,000-foot level is something called a comprehensive plan. It's the vision, it's the view, it's the intention, it's how you want your city to grow, develop, change over the years. From your comprehensive plan, you develop something called a future land use map, which is kind of a broad brush, here's the map of the city, and here's what we think this area should do, and here's what we think this area should do. From your future land use map, you could become more specific. You produce zoning ordinances that spell out in more detail what you can do in particular areas, what properties are approved for and what they're not approved for. And then you implement that zoning ordinance through a series of other local ordinances. So it's a hierarchy of things. It starts broad brush and then narrows down. And the state requires that all municipalities have a comprehensive plan and that they be reviewed on a regular basis. So that's what we're doing. Any additional council questions or comments? Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 5? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Get back to council. Any questions, comments, or a motion?
Are we talking about item 4?
Yes.
Yeah, but there was an addition.
Oh, okay. Move approval.
Yeah.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 6, an ordinance consisting of a comprehensive plan amendment from Flagler County designation to City of Palm Coast designation residential and industrial for 276 plus or minus acre for the area known as Grand Landings North. Mr. Reichman.
Mr. Mayor, the next two matters items are consistent with what you just described. We're amending our future land use map in this agenda item, and then we'll, as to the same property, we'll look at the zoning designation for that property. This ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the City of Palm Coast 2035 comprehensive plan as previously amended, for all pursuant to Section 163 of Florida statutes. This ordinance amends the future land use map, or FLUM, designation for 276 acres more or less of certain real property from residential, low-density rural estate, agricultural and timberlands, and industrial, which are all Flagler County future land use map designations, to residential and industrial, which are City of Palm Coast future land use map designations, as described in more detail in the legal descriptions, which is are an exhibit to this ordinance, including a note on the future land use map to limiting the lands designated as residential to 3 units per acre, and a note limiting non-residential use in the industrial area to 200,000 square feet. This ordinance provides for conflicts, ratification of prior acts, codification, severability, and effective date.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
This is the first reading of this ordinance, and so we do have a full presentation. The presentation will cover both this item and then the next item, which is rezoning, because the two are really tied together. And this is the original comp plan and map designation and zoning, because these properties were just recently annexed into the city immediately south of the airport. So this will be our original shot at these properties. Jose, take it from there.
Again, if the properties look familiar, it's probably because it was just recently annexed into the city at the last council hearing. And the total acreage of the property is about 276 acres, again, located at the southeast corner of the airport. This is State Road 100, and this is I-95, and this is Seminole Woods Boulevard and Parkway. So again, 276 acres. The properties that are subject to this comprehensive plan amendment and rezoning includes both properties owned by Florida Landmark Communities, LLC, and parcels that are owned by the City of Palm Coast, and mainly that's the Iroquois Canal that runs right through the middle of that parcel. And again, this is a city-initiated comprehensive plan amendment and zoning map amendment. The current existing FLUM on the subject property, which is shown in the hatch pattern, the northern end of it is currently agriculture and timberlands, and that's composed of about 18 acres, with the bulk of it being residential, low-density rural estate. And there's a small portion of it that's industrial, about 5 acres. Again, I mentioned that a portion of the subject property is owned by the city, and that's mainly this rectangular parcel that runs, that bisects other parcels. And this is the location of that Iroquois waterway. So What's being proposed right now is that essentially to change the current Flagler County future land use map designation to city designations of industrial for the parcels that are north of the canal and residential for the large parcel that is south of the canal. In addition to the future land use map amendment, we're also proposing that we, and in conjunction with the property owner, we are going to place some additional limitations on the residential density and intensity that can be developed on the parcels. For the residential parcel, density would be limited to 3 units per acre. And within the industrial parcel, development will be limited to 200,000 square feet. Going through the public facilities impact analysis, the net result of the proposed amendment was that there would be an increase in potential number of dwelling units from approximately 256 units to 609 units. There will be a decrease in the potential square footage of non-residential development from 374,899 square feet to 200,000 square feet. The overall result of its impact on public facilities is that there would be a decrease in PM peak hour daily trips. There would be increase in demand on water, sewer, solid waste, and student stations, meaning the amendment will likely produce more students. And, of course, this increase in demand can currently be accommodated by what we have in existing facilities. The other review that we do with a future land use map amendment is to review it for its overall consistency with a comprehensive plan. Overall, the changes we're proposing would make the land uses really more compatible with the surrounding area. If I just may go back briefly to the map, as you can see, where we're proposing industrial land uses, it's really consistent because adjacent to it are lands that are designated as mixed use, and of course being directly adjacent to the airport, which has a Flagler County designation of residential. I'm sorry, of industrial. And although there's this small residential pocket here, again, that's currently in the county right now, but would likely come to the city in the future.
And what is that now?
This one, sir?
Nope, the proposed flume.
The proposed flume is industrial.
Currently?
County.
It's county. Okay.
And what we're proposing, again, for the area south of the canal would be more consistent with surrounding land uses, and that's residential. And as you can see, the areas to the west and to the south are mainly designated for. The yellow color represents residential land use designation.
I got one question.
Yes, sir.
What is the logic behind going from 374,000 square feet to 200,000?
That's just a way to, again, to limit the square footage. Based on our conversation with the landowner, there are wetlands within the industrial zone parcels, and those lands, based on a representative from the landowner, they feel that 200,000 square feet is really more than adequate to accommodate what they want to do on those lands. And it also helps that when we do the public facilities impact analysis, it shows less of an impact that we present to the state. And typically less questions are asked when that's the case. And so looking at, going back again to consistency with a comprehensive plan, we find that the amendment is consistent with policy 1421. That is, the city shall provide an appropriate balance of commercial, retail, office, and industrial land uses on the flume to balance jobs and housing. Again, we feel that this proposed amendment accomplishes that. We have an increase in available industrial areas, and again, allowing for more compatible land uses with the existing land use. So with the findings, we find it consistent with a comprehensive plan. There's no significant impact on level of service for public service and infrastructure. And again, it is more consistent with the surrounding land uses. Moving on to the zoning, which again gets us down to the closer level of review. This is the current Flagler County designations for the parcels. You have 203 acres right now that are designated as industrial, really industrial planned unit development, and that's a county designation. The southern portion of that subject property is currently designated as new residential community or planned unit development. Essentially, it's for residential uses. So to be consistent with the comprehensive plan and consistent with what we're trying to accomplish, we're proposing and recommending that the areas, again, the canal, which is the Iroquois Waterway, parcels north of that would be designated as heavy industrial, or IND2, and the parcel south of the canal would be designated for single-family residential. Again, consistent with the Grand Landings PUD, MPD, which is south of that, and consistent with the residential areas to the west of it, the double L section.
Jose, what do we mean when we say high-intensity industrial?
We have two industrial designations in the city. One is light industrial, which is IND1, and high intensity is really a heavy, well, high-intensity industrial. Again, it just provides for a difference in the level of uses that may be permitted. The reason we've gone to this is that the property owner does have a proposal that in the future they might want to have a borough pit activity in this area, and that's not permitted in any zoning district in the city other than IND2. And okay. So that's but that's another, the borough pit itself would be another level of review in the future.
So the property owner already has a plan for it, so we're kind of changing it to suit what they have planned?
To accommodate again, based on review with the comprehensive plan and the surrounding uses, we feel that it is an appropriate zoning and comprehensive plan designation that we're proposing for the parcels.
And Mayor, Council, let me add that when a city annexes in a piece of property, by state law, you're required to change its comprehensive plan future land use designation as well. It's potentially its zoning to be consistent with that within a reasonable period of time. So this is something that has to be done anyway. Just to make sure you're aware of that.
And just to wrap it up, the zoning, again, will be consistent with the comprehensive plan designations that has been proposed for the parcels. The proposed zoning is more compatible with surrounding land uses. And again, there is public infrastructure capacity available to serve the development. And again, the proposed changes, we feel, creates a more appropriate buffer between residential and non-residential and the airport uses in the surrounding area. So with our recommendation, staff and the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board, which held a public hearing on these items, both recommend approval of the proposed FLUM amendment from residential, low-density rural estate, agriculture and timberlands, and industrial, which are county designations, to residential and industrial, which are City of Palm Coast designations, along with the footnotes limiting development within the amendment area. Additionally, staff and PLDRB are recommending approval of the proposed zoning map amendment from industrial and rural community planned unit developments, those are the county designations, to single-family residential, SFR1, and heavy industrial, IND2. And should these be approved tonight, the comprehensive plan amendment will be transmitted to the state and review agencies, where they will have 30 days to provide us with comments or objections to the future to the amendment. And so then after the 30 days that we receive comments, we will schedule the items for a second public hearing with City Council.
That property to the east of the IND2, that's IND1, right?
This one?
To the east.
I'm sorry.
The east. Is that what that is?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
IND1, yes, sir.
Okay.
Other council questions?
If I might be able to just kind of summarize, the canal is a breaking point. And that, you know, you don't want residents too close to the airport, and yet you don't want the industrial too close to the residents. And we already have residential development out there, as you can see by the map. Mm-hmm. And so the logical breaking point from a planning standpoint is really the canal. It's a good buffer. So that's really what kind of to summarize everything Jose said, is north is industrial, south is residential. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Very fair.
Additional council questions?
I just have one. The area that's going to abut the residential area?
Yes, ma'am.
The residents of that area, do they have any, I'm thinking, is it going to come up that they don't want whatever we're changing happening in their neighborhood behind them?
You're talking about this area or
no,
this area?
To the west?
To the west.
Right there?
Sure. Actually, there were portions of this neighborhood was notified of a neighborhood meeting, which we're required to do prior to initiating the public hearing process. We did not receive any comments from them. But frankly, I believe that the buffer we're providing and the distance from the proposed industrial areas, I think, are adequate and should not really impact what that residential community. And in fact, and again, as we propose, to the east of them, will be residential. Yes, ma'am.
And actually, I believe it'll be less intense residential. I believe to the west is 4 units per acre.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
This is 3 units. Per
yes,
acre.
As most areas in platted Palm Coast, it's about 4 units per acre. When this comes in, they will be limited to basically 3 units per acre.
And also, the point is currently under the county designation, it's industrial.
That's
so,
right.
So the residents are going to see lower density residential in an area that right now could turn into industrial. So it's actually a good thing for the residents in that area, in our opinion.
Did we get any feedback from them?
We did not. Okay. No, sir. But they were sent, as required, we sent letters 300 feet out from the amendment area.
Other council questions? We're going to open the meeting to the public. There were really two agenda items under consideration here. Agenda item 6, which is the comprehensive plan amendment, and 7, which is the zoning map amendment. We will vote on them separately, but I'd be happy to take comments on either or both together. Aim for the public. Wish to be heard on either agenda item number 6 or number 7 or 6 and 7 together.
When you go industrial, your water use is less than if you're residential. So if you're putting up, I don't know how many homes they're going to put up. Are we, as the citizens now, living here now, are we going to foot the bill for these people that come in later and buy these homes, you know, with their with all the additional stuff that it has to be done with roads and stuff like that. I know we got an impact fee. No, but if you go from industrial to residential, I don't know if the impact fee changes or not. And then how do we supply water? You know, I understand we're going through a lot of this, you know, extra money to get extra water, to purify the water better, to get it more drinkable, and so we don't waste it. And it goes gray or brown, right? But in the meantime, what are we doing with drinking water? You know, I look at Plantation Bay, and those people can't even drink their water. They can even bathe in their water. And is that what we're going to be coming to? Right? The more homes, the more water, the more water. You got 3.5 people per house, from what I understand. But mostly, it's more than that, but it's the water, and the water, and the water, and we ain't got it.
We've got an answer to your question. Next speaker. So you don't approach the podium. We'll close the public portion of the meeting, come back to council. But first, let's address the two issues. Regardless of whether it's residential or industrial or commercial, there are impact fees that are assessed that are intended to cover the infrastructure costs for that development. The impact fees for residential are based on per residence. Impact fees for commercial and industrial are based, I believe, on square footage. But they're designed to cover the costs of the roads and the other infrastructure that are necessary. There are similar, essentially, impact fees for the utility. So when you build a house, or whether you build a commercial building, or whether you build an industrial building, there is a fee that you are charged to meet the infrastructure needs to expand the service. I might point out that because we have a water utility, we also have a designated service area, in which we not only have the right to provide our utility, but we have the obligation to provide our utility. So all of this is built into our long-range capital improvement plan. So we would not, council would not, I don't believe, allow expansion beyond what we felt was reasonable in terms of our capacity to meet water needs. Jack, you're absolutely right. Other utilities don't have the same high quality of water that we have. It's unfortunate. Hopefully they'll be able to solve the problem, but I think we're in pretty good hands. Jose, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I have nothing to add to that, Mayor.
Okay. Back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion? And this is on agenda item 6 only.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobiel?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nenz?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 7, which is the companion amendment, agenda item. This is the zoning map, which is simply taking the next step down, going from the 10,000 to the 2,000-foot level and looking at what goes on here. Again, I will ask if anybody from the audience has any comments.
Mr. Mayor,
We
need to read the title.
Oh, we didn't read the title. Please read number 7 for me.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
I always want to do that. Trying to avoid putting you through all this arduous work.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the consideration. But this is known to the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, sort of providing for the amendment of the official zoning map as established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. This ordinance amends the zoning designation for approximately 276 acres, subject property known as Grand Landings North, from Industrial Plan Unit Development, or IPUD, and New Rural Communities Plan Unit Development, or NRC PUD, Flagler County designation, to Single Family Residential SFR1 and Heavy Industrial, or IND2, City of Palm Coast designations. Subject properties are more particularly depicted and described in Exhibit A, whose parcel identification numbers are provided in Exhibit B. This ordinance provides for severability, for conflicts, for non-codification, and for an effective date. Mayor, Council, this matter is quasi-judicial. So if there have been any ex parte communications on this matter, the rezoning, prior tonight, those need to be disclosed at this time.
Are there any ex parte communications?
None
for me. Okay. I assume, Mr. Landon, you are satisfied with the presentation thus far?
Yes.
As I say, this is the ordinance that implements the zoning changes. Council, any additional questions on agenda item number 7? And from the public, wish to be heard on agenda item number 7? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion. We can go back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobiel?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nenz?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 8, a resolution accepting the City of Palm Coast Wastewater Management System Facilities Plan dated February 2015. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, it's not just all about water, it's also about wastewater. When you have water, you also have the wastewater. In this case, we're talking about wastewater, or a lot of people call sewer. And as you know, we have for a number of years been right at the edge of capacity of the one sewer plant we have here in Palm Coast, and have been watching and monitoring very closely as to when's the right time to proceed with the plans for the second one. And we believe now is the right time based on what we're seeing. And so this proposal is to the next step in a long process, about a three-year process, to actually make the second plant become a reality. Going to turn it over to Richard. Would point out that there is a facility plan and then there's the financial plan, and the presentation covers both of those, so this presentation will cover this item and the next item. But once again, Mayor, you have to take action on those separately. So, Richard, with that, would you introduce our guest and the details?
Yes, good evening. I have with me this evening David Garrock, is the president of CPH Engineers, one of our continuing services consultants, who will present the plan, and then followed by Rob Ory from Public Resource Management Group, who is our rate consultant, who will present the capital financing plan.
Good evening. I want to thank you all very much for to be here tonight. Under the State Revolving Loan Program, which is what the city proposes financing this the proposed wastewater plant under, there's a requirement that you have a public hearing and that you adopt the facilities plan, which will be presented tonight, and also the capital finance plan, which basically outlines how the city would repay the loan if they borrow under the State Revolving Loan Program. The state, the federal government, and the state have established a program that basically provides a very cost-effective funding mechanism for these type of capital improvement programs. Right now, we anticipate that we'd be able to borrow funds at about 0.83% interest rate, which is a very attractive rate to be able to fund this type of a facility. Currently, the city has one wastewater treatment plant. The existing capacity is 6.83 million gallons a day. As part of when the city purchased the land and built water treatment plant number three up on the north end of the city, there was plans to co-locate a future wastewater plant to serve the areas on the northern portion of the city and to serve basically future development in that area. So the site was planned. Even the improvements when water treatment plant number three was built were designed to accommodate that future wastewater treatment plant number two. As part of FDEP requirements, which regulate the wastewater facilities, they have two requirements for basically planning and implementation of capacity. The first item is if you're going to exceed the capacity of your existing facilities within 4 years, you have to begin planning for the expansion of that necessary capacity to serve future growth. Basically, the city is well underway with that. When growth was going quite rapidly, they had planned out the wastewater plant number two, had actually done design work on it, and put it on hold, because it became apparent that that capacity was not needed at that time. The second requirement that DEP has is that if you're going to exceed the capacity of your existing facility within 6 months, you're required to have completed the construction of the new facility and submit an operations permit to basically put that online 6 months prior to exceeding the capacity of your existing facility.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
When we say equal or exceed capacity, how is that measured? It's obviously not a one-time, today we exceeded it. It's what
DEP bases it on, the three-month average daily flow going to the facility. Okay. So basically, that you have a running three-month average daily flow that DEP will look at and say, okay, your capacity is now exceeded.
Okay. And that's a continuous? So, if we have a bad weather month, would it be looked at the next 3 months, the prior 3 months? At what point I'm looking at is they are they going to come and say, this is it, you've exceeded. How do we,
It's basically that three-month average daily flow. But keep in mind DEP, if you're up to that capacity and and you know, you're under construction, you're nearing completion of construction, DEP considers those things because we'll submit a construction permit, we'll have permits. They know, you know, what we're doing, you know, what the city's doing. You know, so they want to make sure that you're taking appropriate action, you know, to make sure that you can meet that capacity. Also, you know, they're going to look at, as part of that plant, making sure that we're complying with the effluent requirements. Mm-hmm. You know, so, the plants are designed to take, you know, certain peaks. You know, so, you know, if you have a small peaking period where you've got, a great deal of rainfall, you know, we design the facility to take, you know, those larger flows during short periods of time.
Okay. And when you say they look at, are they monitoring this every quarter?
You submit every month.
Okay.
You are submitting every month. Okay. They submit monthly operating reports for all of their facilities that are required to go to DEP.
Okay. Thank you.
So the last item is the strategic action plan. Of course, the under the city's strategic action plan, they've committed to basically, provide facility capacity upgrades to ensure that you've got adequate capacity to meet the city's growth needs. This shows the projected flows for the service area. As you can see, basically, the flows as of 2018, based on these projections, mid-2018 will exceed the capacity of the existing facility. These projections are relatively conservative, actually quite conservative projections. They're based on 520 ERUs, that was the growth that occurred in 2014, and then increasing that by about 4% a year through the year 2018. And again, that shows the capacity being exceeded in mid-2018.
Yeah, question. Why, under these circumstances, as grave as it can get if we exceed these numbers, are we being conservative? I'm trying to understand. I like being conservative when we're trying to project growth.
Well,
in this situation, it's not a good thing.
I think we're being somewhat conservative because of the history of what has occurred over the past five years. When you're using the beeper numbers and projecting out, they had some very high growth numbers based on historic growth that was occurring, and then of course we've had this slowdown. So we're trying to be conservative and not overestimate that we're going to have a significant amount of growth coming within the city, but we obviously do want to make sure that we're conservative enough that we do have capacity available to serve that future development as it comes online.
And what are the ramifications if we don't, if we decide not to build another facility?
What happens? A couple of things. One is the you will receive a consent order potentially from DEP, which basically puts you on notice and potentially fines associated with it. For not expanding your facility to meet your obligations. So like I said, you can have fines and the consent order. Of course, the other thing that DEP will do is they will stop issuing permits for any new development. So they will not allow any future development to occur if you can't demonstrate you've got adequate capacity to serve that new development.
Let me add to that though, because Palm Coast, with our lots that are built out, we have 18,000 existing lots that we're obligated to provide service to. You can't say to somebody, well, that lot you bought 10 years ago, well, it's worthless because you can't do anything with it. So that's where the DEP cannot stop those connections, but they can fine us, they can force us to expand our facilities to accommodate those new customers that we're obligated to serve. So this isn't a matter of saying, oh, we'll just stop all new development. We have existing properties out there that have development rights.
My concern is why we're being conservative. See, I think maybe I'm being misread.
Let me try to help with that one, because we actually at one time said, no, we need to get this started sooner.
Yeah.
But we really didn't see the growth happening. And then there was that big prediction as to, all right, is a recession going to last for 10 years, or is it going to be 10 days or somewhere in between? Is a housing bust, how soon are we going to come out of that? So at that time, City Council, when we made this presentation, made a decision and said, until we start seeing growth start up again, we're not going to start spending money on that growth, and that we need to see the growth start. But as soon as it does get started, we also know that with the amount of time it takes to bring a plan online, we need to get it started quickly. So this is very consistent with our strategy of not pulling the trigger on a new plant until we actually start seeing new homes being built again and businesses moving in, but not waiting until we were already at capacity. You know, we've just learned from history that if we say, oh, we're going to see the kind of growth we did last decade, people laugh at us. So we have maybe gone too far the other way. I think we probably have, but it's because of just the history of, oh, Palm Coast isn't going to grow. So now we're trying to do that balance. The fact of it is, no matter what the projections are, conservative or more realistic, we need the plant if we're going to keep seeing new homes built and new businesses come to town. And we need to get started now so that it's ready. Because we think, our experts would tell you that we actually think that we'll be at capacity at our current plant before the new plant is completed. But it will be close enough that it won't cause us any serious problems. We will be able to handle it. So we think we're at that point where we can't wait any longer, but we didn't wait too long. We think it's just right.
Okay. We'll see, right?
We'll see.
3 years from now.
Once we're as long as we're in this process, then they won't stop our permits,
no.
Correct?
You know, as long as we've you know, as we're close, you know, if we were in this process and we're 2 years out to complete construction, then it could be a problem. But if we're, you know, where we anticipate is, you know, we're talking, you know, within, you know 6 months, a year, you know, we'll be well under construction, near completion with the facilities. You know, we don't believe that we would have problems with DEP.
More than likely, one thing they will do is if you have a proposed development, they're likely to issue what they call a dry line permit. So they'll allow the developer to construct his infrastructure while our plant is under construction, but won't give him a permit to activate it until our plant's online.
This just graphically depicts the historic flows and shows as of mid-2018 exceeding the capacity of the existing plant. In order to obtain the funding under the SRF program, there's a readiness to proceed requirement, and that's basically what we're in now. We've got to get the plans and specifications for the improvements completed. We've got to get permits in hand. We've got to go through this process, have the hearings, adopt the facilities plan, adopt the capital finance plan. So basically, we're in the process of getting all those documents prepared in order to be on the August hearing that FDEP will have to provide funding for the wastewater treatment facility. Upon approval of the funding, which we anticipate at their hearing in August, then the loan agreements would be prepared, and we would be back to the council for approval of those loan agreements and then proceed with the bidding of the project, anticipate construction beginning in near the beginning of 2016, about a two-year construction period with the project being completed near December 2017 and being online in order to provide capacity prior to exceeding capacity at the existing facility. Proposed improvements is a 2 MGD expansion at this time, 2 million gallons a day additional capacity.
Richard, the new plant would be projected as a 2 million MGD capacity but expandable to 6. What's the difference between a 2 and a 6? what do you have to do to expand it?
Basically, they're almost like modules. So they'll be constructing treatment basins, concrete structures, and treatment modules. So it actually will operate almost like 3 2-million-gallon-a-day plants side by side.
So if once this plant is built and online, if we decide somewhere down the road that we need to increase its capacity, how much money are we talking about?
Well, it would be, in today's dollars, it would be less than the initial infrastructure for 2 million gallon a day. There's some common components that will be part of the initial construction. So the headwork structure, which brings the influent into the plant, and some of the disposal pipelines going out, pipelines coming in, a lot of that will already be already constructed as part of the first phase. So it would be considerably less than the initial construction. You're starting in a brand new site. There's site prep. There's reject ponds that have to be built, and those kinds of things that won't be part of future expansions.
But it's smarter to build a $2 million plant and then expand it rather than build a $6 million right off the bat?
Yes. One of the things about wastewater plants is they have to have enough flow to adequately treat the wastewater. So if you build a 6 million gallon a day plant and you only put a million gallon a day in it, it's not going to work.
Okay.
So you have to kind of build it to scale.
Okay.
It also allows the funding, you know, because, you know, obviously impact fees, you know, is the intent to be able to pay for these facilities. So it allows that funding to go in line with the timing of your construction. So if you built it all now, you know, it'd be capacity for many, many years into the future, you know, and so it'd take a very long time to get those impact fees in to be able to pay for that.
Okay.
This just shows that, you know, upon, you know, which kind of leads into your question you had before, you know, if, you know, with completion of this phase and expanding to the additional 2 MGD, you know, we anticipate that based on projected long-term flows that you'd have adequate capacity through the year 2014.
2024.
Yes, excuse me, 2024. This just shows the implementation schedule. You know, the planning documents are being prepared. Design and permits are underway. We've got permitting with the we've got a wet weather discharge to a wetland system, which is all being permitted, with the goal of having all of that prepared by June of this year and submitting to DEP for the funding in August, and construction beginning near the beginning of 2016 with completion in near the end of 2017. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with this, but if there are any questions, you know, you can let us know. You know, basically, these are all the requirements under the State Revolving Loan Program. We've been going through all of that. You know, the documents are all being prepared. With the intent of being able to meet the readiness to proceed requirements, which would be in the June time frame. So basically, that's well underway, and the documents are well underway and being prepared. So tonight, what we need the council to do is adopt the facilities plan, which basically identifies the wastewater treatment plant improvements for plant number 2, the wastewater collection and pumping system, which basically takes and diverts a portion of the existing service area to the new wastewater treatment facility. Also, there's improvements for reclaim system, which will interconnect with the city's existing reclaim water system, and a wetlands backup discharge system that's all part of the project and all described within the facilities plan. The overall projected cost for the program is just slightly over $30 million. So in addition to the adoption of the facilities plan, we also have the capital finance plan. And, you know, the Capital Finance Plan Public Resource Management Group has worked to analyze how, you know, the city would be able to fund and pay, repay that loan. And Rob Ory's here to be able to present the Capital Finance Plan.
Richard, while he's setting up, where is this facility going to discharge? Is it going to percolate in that area where you're going to build it?
Actually, there's the main discharge will be reused for irrigation. Our backup discharge will discharge into the wetland system that is between Indian Trails and US 1.
Okay, the wellheads that we've got, the new wellheads across US 1 and the old Rainier property, yes. You don't see any problem with the wellheads that are going to draw water out of the ground, the aquifer being polluted by the discharge from this facility?
Actually, quite to the contrary. We would prefer to discharge or apply to the lands near our wellheads so that we can recharge the aquifers with the effluent being filtered through the soils all the way down to the aquifer, and then it actually will increase our aquifer capacity.
At some point in time, and not being an engineer, I'm trying to see this effluent trickling down through the surface into the aquifer. Won't the filter get plugged up, so to speak, and not filter anymore?
No. It's these aquifers are eons old that have been getting recharged with rainfall forever and ever, and especially the confined superficial, which is where we're drawn from in this area, it's all receives, the aquifer gets all its recharge locally from local rainfall.
So the water that that we pull out of those wellheads will be just no different than it is today, because I don't want to,
correct.
Had a citizen talk about Plantation Bay where the water will make you glow in the dark.
The application of the reuse will actually enhance the capacity of these wells.
All right, thank you.
One question, Richard. Is this tying into the project where we are putting in the reclamation piping up that way?
Actually, it does. The new reuse line that's currently underway will connect wastewater treatment plant number one effluent with the wastewater treatment plant number two effluent, and that will give us some additional flexibility at wastewater treatment plant number two to move reuse over to the east side where it's used more. Okay.
Mr. Ory.
Thank you, sir. For the record, my name is Robert Ory with Public Resources Management Group. Also with me tonight is Mr. Jeff Wilson, who's worked with me on this project and has worked with you on several projects actually over the past several years. What we're going to talk about over the next several minutes, a little bit of a purpose of the capital finance plan. We've heard the facilities plan. Now we're talking about the money side a little bit. Talk about the recent rate history, some of the assumptions we relied upon in our evaluations, and our observations and conclusions for your consideration as we move forward. The purpose of why we're sitting here today is we've developed a capital finance plan, which is required by DEP, the FDEP, to secure the SRF loan. It basically is the city's commitment to pay off the loan, have the ability to pay off the loan, and say you're going to pay off the loan, basically. It's kind of because you're getting additional debt and financing requirements, so we have to prove to them that we can pay for it, basically what it is. We did a seven-year financial forecast and funding analysis, fiscal year 2015, the current year we're in today, through 2021. Why so long? We have to go 3 years beyond the in-service date of the project to show the ability to pay the debt service or the loan repayment after the project comes online. I'll explain a little more about that a bit later on. And as David mentioned to you earlier, if that facility comes online around 2018, at 18, 19, 20, 21 or so, you got three more years of that, and that's why we go that far out in the future. Again, we want to make sure rates and revenues and our financial resources meet our expenditure needs and pay for the new loan we're talking about tonight. A little bit about the recent rate history. The last time we actually looked at your rates was in support of the Series 2013 bond issue for $89 million. It was improvement bonds and refunding bonds. One of the major items that occurred from this financing was that we released $6.3 million, what was called a debt service reserve fund. That was a fund or amount of monies that were created by the prior bonds because of your credit rating, that you are a good, strong credit rating, the market conditions today. We were able to issue these bonds and release those dollars, which allowed us to put those in for future capital improvements. It was a very, very positive thing that the city did, besides lowering interest rates at the same time, so we got a lot of benefit. As part of this bond issue, the bankers and financial community wants to see a five-year financial projection. That's what the review of the rates was. We initially identified 2 7% rate adjustments followed by what's called rate indexing thereafter. Rate indexing is basically the application of an inflationary rate adjustment to your rates on an annual basis. Many, many utilities across the state utilize this process. It's part of your rate ordinance that you can do this. Even the Florida Public Service Commission in the regulation of private utilities also has provisions for a rate index. Anyway, to make a long story short, we identified 7% for 2 years. We held a meeting similar to this and determined that, well, let's, part of the thing is push this wastewater plan out. We may not need it. Growth wasn't very active at that point in time. And so we recommended 2 4% adjustments. They both have been implemented. We're in the second one today with indexing thereafter. So that's kind of where we are today in terms of rate adjustments. The council, by deferring the wastewater plan, also deferred the ability to raise rates, which was a good thing. A lot's happened since then, actually. We've had a lot of benefits, improved economic conditions. We have higher growth now. And that was one of the issues back several years ago, is when will growth occur? And when, if we can wait long enough and growth does occur, that produces additional revenues and whatnot and helps us out from a financial standpoint. We've got favorable interest rates. It's as I think David mentioned, that the cost to borrow for this facility is very, very low. But the market has been very good in general anyway. Rates have been excellent, and the costs are low. It's a low inflationary climate as well, which is good. But also, one of the benefits of the SRF loan program is you have the ability to defer the debt payment until the facility comes online. It's like a line of credit, so to speak, but it's excellent because you only pay interest on what you draw upon. You don't pay it on the whole loan like you see a normal conventional financing, but you only on what you draw. For example, if I would go through the conventional market and borrow $31 million, I'd start paying interest immediately on that $31 million. If I go to the SRF program, let's say I draw $1 million to start the wastewater plant, I'm only accruing interest expense on that $1 million. So as you borrow more, it goes. So it allows you to defer interest costs to the benefit over time. Also, by deferring, you can continue to grow, add additional customers, and spread those costs out over a greater customer base. So those are a lot of the benefits of what's happened since 13. Some of the immediate risks, well, construction costs are starting to increase. It's time to start moving. There's a lot of competition out there for funds and resources. Resources could be workers, materials. We mentioned this before. One of the biggest ones out there is Miami-Dade Water and Sewer Authority. We think it was that's pretty far away south from us. They have a $14 billion program going on. So there's a lot of people going down there. And so that's causing costs to rise. So you're hitting the market right. It's time to move. That is a risk. And also the capacity really can't be deferred too much longer. That was some of the discussion earlier. If we what's going on, if we defer the project, we're going to reach our capacity limits. So we really need to move now, and those are some of the immediate risks, and that's why we're here today. In terms of the SRF loan program, as you heard already from David and Richard, it's a 2-million-gallon initial expansion, total cost, construction cost, bricks and mortar, about $30.1 million. The total estimated loan principal, though, will be about $31.1 million. Why is that higher than $30 million? There's a couple reasons. First of all, DEP, as part of their condition to give you the loan, they charge a 2% loan administration fee. That's that cost of issuance, so to speak. It's just 2%. Secondly, when I was talking about that capitalized interest, that line of credit, that builds up the loan value. You don't start paying that back until you start paying the full loan. So that differential is that 2% loan administration fee coupled with the capitalized interest or accrued interest during the construction period. Once it's complete, you'll start paying your loan payments, and that'll begin around fiscal year 2018. And if you think about David's graph, he showed when that project came online, that's when the payment starts as well. The estimated loan repayment is about $1.7 million per year. It does assume an incredibly attractive interest rate, 0.83%. I kind of, on this side of the Fed, symbols call that free money. It's so low, and it does assume the effects with the Davis-Bacon Act, the American Iron Steel Act. That's helping us get this low rate. Even if you didn't look at that, you'd still be talking less than 2%, which is still incredibly good loan, a good interest rate. Excuse me. There are some covenants on this loan. Once you pay all your expenses, it's called net revenues. You get your gross revenues minus all your expenses equals your net revenues. And after you pay your senior lien bonds, you have to have enough cash flow to cover this loan by a minimum of 1.15 times. That's a low coverage rate. It's typical for these type of loans, and we will greatly exceed this based on our ongoing capital funding plan.
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
I think slow, so I'm two slides back.
Okay.
But you could stay there.
Okay.
We're going to incur about $1.5 million.
1.7.
Interest. 1.7.
Interest
million.
In principal.
Oh,
P&I.
No, not payment. I'm talking about the accrued interest.
About $1 million. Yes.
About $1 million.
Well, it should be less than that because it's probably going to be. My guess is about $400,000 to $500,000.
Okay.
If you take 2% of $30 million, that's $600,000.
So we're at
then
a
you get the differential, and that'd be your capitalized interest.
So about $500,000 in interest.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, it goes over time. So the first year, if you've borrowed $10 million, let's say, over time, you can imagine that accrued interest is fairly low. When you're at the $30 million range before you start payment, it gets a little higher, and so they recognize that in the loan estimates for you. But with 8.83%, it's a pretty low carry cost on those borrowing, which is excellent. There are some advantages of debt funding. You know, people have asked, why don't you just pay this all up front right now versus debt financing? And when you look at assets and construction facilities of this magnitude, this is a pretty big undertaking. It's $30 million. Generally, you utilize debt financing because it matches the funding with the service life of the asset. So as customers come on and they pay their impact fees, that's one way to fund the capital. It's a pledge revenue to the loan. But second, it's matching that debt service payment to those future customers as well. So it doesn't put all the burden on the existing ratepayer. So you want to have that match of payment, capital recovery to the amount of the debt financing coming out. If you wanted to fund this all up front, $30 million over 3 years, you'd need a 40% rate adjustment to get that pay-as-you-go capital, which just isn't feasible right now. Because then when you did that, you'd have a 40%.
Ever.
Yeah, that's true. I've done one of those. It wasn't fun, believe me. But then once you funded it, then you lower rates again. So now you have topsy-turvy rates, and you don't want that either. You want your rates to be level, sustainable, and for the benefit of the ratepayer, that they don't have a lot of movement and rate shock to them. Go ahead. Some of the forecast assumptions: we have growth about 1% per year. We're slightly less than the capacity forecast, about 400 to 450 customers per year. You may ask me, why are we less than that? We want to be a little bit conservative on our side, too, on the ability to pay. Conservatism for the finance guy is higher expenses, lower revenues. Conservatism for building capacity is we have a lot more growth. We need the capacity there. The key is not having too far apart. And if you think about it, that's why we had a deferral back 2 or 3 years ago. We didn't want too much capacity sitting there. Because to be honest with you, your most expensive capacity is your unused capacity. It's sitting there. And you want to utilize this capacity as much as you can. Capacity flows equal revenues in. And that's why we're looking at that. So we're a little bit less, not much, about 1%. Operating expenses around 3%. That's very typical what we see all over the state. But the one that points something out to y'all is personnel, power, chemicals, and sludge, that's 73% of the operating expenses. That's where all of it is those four items. It's about 53%, the total operating expenses, about 53% of your total revenue requirements. Total revenue requirements means the total expenditure and funding needs of your system. All my outflow, that's 53% of the outflow or what I need to fund. The other thing the city is doing, which I think is very, very prudent, is you are doing annual capital reinvestment of your rates, and we've reflected this in the financial forecast. It's called the Renewal and Replacement Fund, and we've got program deposits into this fund averaging 10% of prior year's gross revenues. What is that for? Those are ongoing dollars to replace assets as they reach their service life. It could be meters. It could be pipes. It could be pumps, panels at your lift station, all that to continue this facility, what we call a going concern basis. If the facility is its ability to provide service, that produces revenues. The bondholders like that, and it pays their debt, so to speak. The other thing, keep in mind, is I'm putting these dollars aside on a sustained basis. I'm not having to borrow debt for all this. You don't want to issue debt for every capital improvement. Meters is not a good asset to debt finance. They have 10-year lives. And these are 20, 30-year repayments. You don't want to have debt longer than your asset life that you're financing. That's not a good thing. You wouldn't issue if you were going to do your roof and you were to borrow money to fix your roof, and it's a 20-year life in your roof, you wouldn't want a 30-year loan on that 20-year roof, for example. Same thing here. Your bond resolution only requires 5%. We've recommended 10%. Many utilities are moving this way. This is one of the biggest issues facing the industry today is the lack of capital reinvestment. This is Miami-Dade, $14 billion. This is Miami-Dade. The debt service requirements with the SRF loan beginning in 2018 is about $13.5 million, or about 34% of your total revenue requirements. And those are some of our primary assumptions. Some of the highlights, though, this forecast, the utility maintains a strong operating margin in excess of 40% every year of our forecast period. What is the operating margin? That's really the net revenues divided by your gross revenues. What is that percent? Basically, 40 cents of every dollar of resources, not impact fees, recurring revenue, goes toward debt, capital reinvestment, and operating reserves, per se. The Moody's and S&P medians, those are the credit rating agencies, the industry average is around 35 to 37%. You're higher than that. And that's where you want to be because the margin provides capital reinvestment and debt coverage. That's the second ratio. Your all-in debt, that's these bonds, your senior lien bonds, plus your SRF bonds, we added all the debt together, averages about a 148 to 150. What that means is on your mortgage, after you paid all your electric bill, your food bill, your gas bill, what's left over, how much can you cover your mortgage payment? Your minimum is around 125, and I think the SRF is 115, as I said earlier. We're over 150, 148 range. That is very strong, and that also provides the ability for ongoing capital reinvestment. We've maintained adequate working capital to minimize financial risk to the rating agencies today. Cash is king. And it promotes a very strong credit rating. You're A-plus by Fitch and Standard & Poor's right now. And I'll bet Chris Quinn that hopefully we'll maybe see an upgrade here. I think you deserve it. But you are very strong financially. And doing all this, what we've projected based on the assumptions, the financing, the needs, that for the next 7 years, only rate adjustments would be the continuation of the annual price indexing, which ranges the inflation rate, 2% per year, no additional rate adjustments to fund this program. So if you think four years ago in 2013, we're thinking 7%, did four. There's a net six sitting there. We don't have to do that anymore. You were in a very strong financial position to do this program without the need for additional rate adjustments above the ongoing indexing, those minor adjustments each year to maintain inflation and margins. And as you can see on this chart, this is the city of Palm Coast right here, the different color. The bottom blue, or this is yellow here, it would be the water rates, and then the red or the green for the city would be the sewer rates. And these are this is a comparison of utilities on the east coast of Florida. And you can see at 4,000 gallons for residential use, that's our typical monthly bill. The average residential customer in the city uses about 4,000 gallons. We're actually right at the average at the lower end of the pack. And keep in mind, many, many of these utilities are also looking at rates. And just for example, Brevard County, which is at the lower end, has adopted a five-year rate phasing plan. You can point to it. Five-year rate phasing plan ranging from 9% to 5%. They did the 9%. I think they've got a 7% and three fives thereafter. They've got a five-year rate plan, so that's going to move up. St. Augustine is looking at 8% rate adjustments as we speak. Port Orange, I know, just went through a rate increase. I don't know the numbers. St. John's County, their sewer rates for the next 2 years are going up at least 7%. Melbourne deferred a rate increase, but they have a scheduled rate increase for next year of 5%. Daytona Beach is in need of rate adjustments as well, and that's being evaluated as we speak. Edgewater has just approved a rate study. So I imagine that one's going to be moving as well. And Deltona just did a rate adjustment. And their sewer rates, I had to make sure Jeff told me this was correct. For 4,000 gallons, it's about $70 just for the sewer rates. So they're incredibly high. So even if we are, as we move forward with indexing only, your competitive position is going to be maintained right basically in the middle, which is excellent. And that's kind of where you want to be. If your rates are too low, you may not be having enough capital reinvestment and enough money going back into your system. I've seen that before. If rates are too high, we're going to have customer issues. We got to Deltona. You're right in the middle, right where you should be. And I think that's very, very positive. It speaks Richard, highly, especially when you bought a utility and you're highly debt leveraged. Yes, sir.
The numbers that you have there now, our utility bills have more than just water and sewer.
That's correct.
You back those out to get this number.
That's correct. This is just water and sewer by themselves.
So it doesn't have storm water.
No storm water, no garbage, no taxes. If there's a tax or a utility tax, for example, on water, it's just what – you don't have that. Many utilities have that as well, but we don't have that. No, it's just comparing the water and sewer bill only, because that's really what we're talking about.
And if I could add, the other two, the stormwater and the trash, those combined is about $30. So, if we're at average of 65, that means the average
$100.
Utility bill, which includes all four, would be about $95.
Right, at the 4,000-gallon level, right.
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 But none of the other cities, those numbers are strictly water and sewer.
That's correct. They
don't have anything else in them.
No, we've not added those. I know many utilities have stormwater utilities. Of course, they all have garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But we did not, since that's not what we're really discussing here in terms of the utility. And while we have water and sewer, even though we're talking water, I show water and sewer. And the reason why is, that's the pledge revenues toward the SRF loan. The FDEP wants utility revenues pledged, so it's water and sewer. That's what we show both, even though it's a wastewater program. Just like your senior lien bonds, this is a water and sewer pledge as well. There's no city ad valorem taxes pledged to this. It's only pledged from utility system rates and revenues, and this is the same way for the SRF as well. That's why you see water and sewer. In this analysis.
And base charges are also in that for all cities?
Yes, base and flow. Okay. In conclusion, the use and securing the 2015 SRF loan is very cost-effective basis to finance the capital wastewater treatment plant expansion, or new plant, actually. It's not only has low issue costs to secure the loan, it allows you to, construct the loan with the least amount of financial impact to you immediately, so it allows more of the system to grow and have yourself be ready for it, and adjust rates for the indexing as well. Incredibly low interest rates. I would tell you, when we were looking at this before, we were thinking conventional dollars, and we were in the 5.75 range, and they're at 0.83%. That's millions of dollars of interest rate benefit, I will tell you. And again, this ability to defer is an excellent item, excellent benefit to us all. To meet the financial plan only requires rate indexing adjustments based on our assumptions. We don't see any need to raise rates above the annual indexing, which you do. You have the capability to repay the 2015 loan and maintain the creditworthiness of the utility system, which is very important. That A-plus rating, and possibly even higher, if I keep my fingers crossed there. Staff will still monitor results, and this is also a big thing with the new rate agency credit criteria. Staff has been looking at this, evaluating this every year, not only through the budget process, but every 2 years they've asked us to come in and review as independent. And the rate agencies really like that as well, that you have both ongoing reviews and independent reviews and engineering reviews to make sure that you're on your plan. Very, 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 very positive. Staff has indicated to us that they will be looking at this again in 2017. We have some potential maybe to refinance the Series 2007 bonds, which provide interest rate savings. We'll update our growth assumptions. If growth increases, then we'll reflect that. If it stays the same, we know where we are. Or help us if it goes the other way, which I don't think it will. And obviously, we keep evaluating our capital program and our cost relationships there. Again, the rate adjustments are being disclosed for the plan. We're not recommending any rate adjustments. The indexing, you've already adopted this as part of your existing rate resolution. And we're basically saying go as is. And with that, I'll turn it over, I guess, to you. Mm-hmm. For this.
Sure.
Unless you have any questions.
I have a kind of a two-part question.
Sure.
And I know we only have one wastewater plant, so I understand the need for it. But we were talking about why we would do a 2 MGD as opposed to a 6 MGD, mm-hmm. and you said that it was because if you did 6 and you didn't need it, you have to have so much flow in order to keep it running. So
right.
What I'm wondering is, if we don't have the growth, and I hate to be thinking negative, but if we don't, then we have this plant with 2 MGD. Can we shut it down and not use it and just still have all that what we built?
I suppose if you had no growth at all, I suppose you could do that. The plan right now would be to divert about 1 million gallons a day of current flow from wastewater plant 1 to wastewater plant 2. So the 2 million gallon a day plant will be operating at 1 million gallons a day, which it can adequately operate on that kind of flow. It'll free up 1 million gallons a day of capacity at wastewater treatment plant number one. And one of the key factors here is where the growth occurs. We don't really know where the growth is going to occur, but we can pretty much assume that growth will occur in the areas that will be served by wastewater treatment plant number one. So we're going to need to free up some excess capacity there, because wastewater treatment plant number one will continue to serve everything on the 100 corridor, the Old Kings Road corridor, and the town center and all of those areas. If growth occurs up in the northwest area, along the US 1 corridor, or even getting over into the planned unit developments out west, then that plant would be able to handle that additional flow in that area. So I think it's going to put us in a pretty good posture so that we can kind of even out the flows as they increase, and we won't have to do too much field infrastructure to move the amount of water we need to move to the plant that will have the capacity.
Let me add one other benefit is, you know, it does rain here periodically, and sometimes it rains really hard. And when you have a little extra capacity at your plants, then you're able to handle that rainwater better, too. Right now, that's one of the problems with our plant is it operates near capacity, over 90% on a day-to-day basis. We get a little rainwater, and it really stretches it real tight. So by having both of them have some capacity, not just for growth, but for rainwater, is actually a good thing for the environment, too.
So,
is that it? One question.
Yes.
How much can we divert to station two?
Our current plan with the plan we have in place and the capital that we're going to apply, the infrastructure in the field is basically building a master lift station that will basically divert about 1 million gallons a day.
And when we need to expand the plant number two, is that in 2 million increments?
That's the plan, yes.
Okay.
And that does allow you to layer in funding mm-hmm. as your growth occurs. He's like I said earlier, if you did fund, you built all six, because mm-hmm. someone will say, well, it's cheaper to build it all today at the lowest cost. But,
yeah.
Well, but again, if you only got one MGD flowing there, you know, you've got to pay the debt service, the financing costs mm-hmm. on that plant. So by phasing it in, you have a better match, again, of your financing and rate revenues mm-hmm. to your capacity needs. It's a pretty prudent thing to do, I think, as well.
This last slide just reiterates pretty much what David was talking about relative to the schedule. And so rather than go through it in detail, if you have any questions on that.
Council questions. The presentations covered agenda items 8 and 9, the facilities plan and the financing plan. Obviously, we'll act on them separately. Questions from council on either 8 or 9? If not, we'll open the meeting to the public. And from the public, again, you have the opportunity to speak on 8 or 9 or 8 or 9 together, since it is one comprehensive concept. And from the public, wish to be heard on agenda items 8 or 9 and or 9. You see no approach to the podium. We'll come back to council on considering agenda item number 8 only. Any additional questions, comments, or emotion?
I have a statement, Mr. Mayor. I go back to my concerns. I just want to reiterate that when we're done with this financing, we're going to be at about a $200 million debt for the utility, which is going to take us to about 33-34% of our revenue is going to go to paying off that debt. I saw something that scared me a little bit, is that we were looking at expanding that plant in 2024. I don't know if I have a question or if I have a statement, but looking at this current process, where we looked at this and we figured we were, you know, we were going to need this plant. You know, we were never going to stop growing. I mean, at some point, it was going to come back. And we just waited until the time came, and then we went ahead and said, okay, we're going to finance this. I guess my question would be, first, were we lucky in where we are right now? In the financing ability and the, you know, getting a 0.83. I mean, I'm looking, let's say, 7 years from complete or 6 years from completion of plant two. We go back and what are we going to do? Are we going to be looking for financing again to do that? Or, and, you know, we don't know what the state's going to be at that point. And we're going to be $200 million in debt at that point. And I'm starting to get a little scared about.
First of all, you, I don't think you'd be $200 million. That, at 2024, you know, for example, you'll pay off $30, $40 million of this bond. number one, because you got this. I just okay, did a quick eyeball.
Let's be conservative and say we're at $150 million.
And a couple things are going to happen. First of all, we're not going to issue any debt until that point in time, and your debt to equity ratio, net plan, is going to improve tremendously because we'll still be doing capital reinvestments. That's a good thing. So the amount of assets on the books relative to your debt is going to improve. If you ask me, are you a high debt-to-equity ratio or debt-to-plant ratio today?
Yes.
I will tell you, yes, you are. Yeah. And there's a reason for that. You bought a utility. It's like you buy your house with hardly anything down. That's where you are. If you think about where you are today, back where you were when you bought the utility 10 years or so ago, you're in a tremendous financial position. When 2024 comes, a couple other things are going to happen. If we have the growth that creates that plan expansion, your customer base will increase by roughly 2 MGD of wastewater, where that's 10, 12,000 ERCs of additional capacity that can support that additional debt. Second thing, they're all going to be paying impact fees. Whether we pay off the bonds early with the impact fees, we pay off, use it to fund that plant. You have a lot of options out there. So to say we're going to issue a lot more debt, it may or may not occur at the level you are at today. Third is the 2 MGD train or expansion will not be what you're paying today in today's dollars because, you know, the headworks is signed at 6. The yard piping and the grounds all at 6. The ponds, I think, were mentioned, are at 6.
Yeah.
We're adding tankage of 2, so that cost will be less. So if you think about that, you should be in a better financial position with not the same type of impact that you're thinking where you're thinking right now. That's from what
yes,
I see today.
I got you. And that, I think, is what I'm trying to get to, is where does that plan lie? So I could sit here today and say, okay, you know, we're going to take on this $30 million. Given the projections that we're looking at over the next, you know, to 2024, where are we saying we're going to take that capital? And this is, I'm not putting this on you.
No,
this is
no,
back on us. Where are we going to say we're going to take that capital and pay off some of these bonds so that we're not just building on a $200 million debt. We're actually using that growth to pay down. Where do we do that is what I'm asking. Not, you know, where do we say we're going to do that? If that growth occurs.
Let me take a shot at it, and then Richard, I'm going to need some help with the details. First of all, extremely proud, and if you hear what the experts say, that our capital plan, both in the facilities themselves and how we have bought a utility that was in dire straits at the time and was headed towards our neighbors to the south, and now actually have a plant or a system, not just a plant, but a system that a lot of our peers are saying, wow, look at what Palm Coast
did. Let me interrupt you 1 second. I have no doubt we have the best people and the best plant in the state. The plan that this SRF plan we're looking at, I mean, it can't be any better. It could if you get down to zero, but you know,
not there now.
Yeah, and they paid us 2%. You know, but that isn't going to get any better. And the fact that we need the plant, I mean, you know what I'm saying. I'm in 100% agreement.
But let me try to get there.
Wait a minute, because I think I know where Mr. Nobile is going. What is the possibility, you're asking, of paying down this debt sooner? And when do we make that commitment? That's where Mr. Quinn follows this on a day-to-day basis. Several years ago, we did a refinancing and saved a significant amount of money.
Right.
As those opportunities appear, he would be remiss if he didn't bring it to council and say, here's an opportunity.
Right. And when we have these discussions right now, those discussions are going on. We're not... our financial people and our plant people are not looking at, today. They're constantly looking at where we're going to be 5-7 years out. In fact, this plan right here, we're looking at 7 years out. And if you recall at the workshop, not only did we talk about this one major capital anytime you built a plant, but we also showed you a 7-year capital improvement plan. And, Richard, this is where it helped me. The amount of capital projects.
86.7 about.
Mm-hmm. About 86.7 million over the next 7 years of paying cash. Mm-hmm. So, because as Rob indicated, there's certain things, you know, when you're putting in a pump, replacing a pump at a pump station, you don't want to borrow money on that pump. But the fact of it is a utility, like a lot of industrial type plants or systems, are very capital intense. And they're just a fact of life that it is expensive to not only build the infrastructure, but then to maintain it and keep it up to date. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Nobile, it's always interesting to have a crystal ball and say, okay, where are we going to be 5 years from now?
Oh yeah.
But that's what I was trying to get at is that we put together that crystal ball.
Now, right.
I wasn't here. Most of you wasn't here when we bought the utility.
Right.
And as you're hearing from our experts, we're better off than was projected at that time today, right, financially and from a infrastructure standpoint. A lot of that has to do with the growth we had.
Yeah.
And the growth help mm-hmm, and the actual customer base. Some of our neighbors are much smaller. They struggle a lot more than we do because they don't have the customer base to spread it out. That's one of the reasons why their rates have to be higher than ours. But, you know, what we have been about and hopefully will continue to be about under my administration, definitely I focus on those capital plans, not today, but where are we headed in the future. And it is we've got a great team here that not only looks at how to spend the money, mm-hmm, but also what's the best way. A good example is refinancing.
Right.
Mayor mentioned that. We've got another one that we know is coming up. And we're going to look at that. Impact fees, mm-hmm, making sure that new customers, all of those kind of pay their fair share. All of those kind of variables we're constantly looking at. It's not a one-time thing, oh, we want to build a plant. This goes on not just every year, but literally every quarter. So, Robin, you wanted to
well,
add
I
to that.
I was say, again, the other thing you all have been doing, which I think is very prudent, is you are doing multi-year planning in the future to kind of track this. Mm-hmm. If interest rates stay low, we may want to finance. If they go up, we need to talk about capital reinvestment more. Or if our growth stops, we don't want to expand wastewater plant number 2 for 2 MGD. The city's been constantly looking at that to try to match cost and revenue as close together as possible for the benefit of the rates, and it's showing.
Yeah.
And I think that's my hat's off to you guys because
that's
what they look
about.
At.
We have this progressive plan,
yeah,
that goes out many years, but it's revisited every year.
Oh yeah,
oh, absolutely. And but where is the commitment to show? I know we have the commitment to what capital projects we're looking at, and based on the projected growth, where that money is going to go, and like we had $87 million we're looking at, obviously it's based on the growth we're projecting to be able to pay for it. But what I would like to know is where is the projected plan to pay down early, if possible, the bonds instead of waiting for a 30-year? And here's my reasoning. All I'm really speaking is that 30 years, 20 years even, is a long time, and many things can happen between that. And you know, to keep ourselves in a position, not always, you know, with a capital-heavy industry, we're not going to sit at zero. You know, it's not going to happen. But we want to be mobile. We want to be agile enough to say, if something occurs, you know, we're not going to overextend ourselves and lose some of our
I think I can answer that.
Okay.
Because nobody has a crystal ball. Mm-hmm. The current plan, we know we're comfortable at 1.48. Chris Quinn monitors this on a, if not daily, certainly a weekly basis. When those opportunities arise, it's the responsibility of this council to take action. Chris will come to us and say, we have an opportunity. We will evaluate the risks and the benefits and the gains, and we will determine when we need to make those actions. And something that I think gets lost in here, and I said this at the workshop, and just for the benefit of the residents, it's interesting to look at the history of this utility. ITT built Palm Coast. ITT built the utility. When ITT decided to leave, they sold the utility to Florida Water, a large corporation having utility plants throughout the state of Florida. They operated as a private utility for a number of years, and they did what many private utilities do, kicked the can down the road, deferred these capital projects, because they knew in their heart of hearts that they weren't going to be here forever. So they deferred a lot of maintenance, renewal and replacement kinds of things. And as predicted, they put the utility up for sale. There's an entity in Florida known as FGUA, the Florida Government Utility Authority. It is a utility authority created by the state of Florida to deal with situations like this where private utilities have the potential of leaving a community in the lurch. And FGUA was poised to buy the utility from Florida Water, from a private utility. Everybody on City Council at that time was very comfortable with that because FGUA had a very strong conservative track record throughout the state. At the last minute, two small communities in the northwest corner of Florida, up in the panhandle, the cities of Milton and Gulf Breeze, joined forces and threw their offer in. They were going to buy the utility. They outbid FGUA. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure why two small cities, one is 8,000, one is 16,000, small cities would want to buy a utility in a relatively large city. It has to do with profit. And this city council at that time realized that our taxpayers, our ratepayers, were in jeopardy because there would be no control over rates. They would raise rates as necessary not only to cover the operation of the utility, but to ensure their return on investment. It was at that time that the city decided, in order to protect our residents, we needed to make a major investment. And we borrowed the money to buy that utility. And that was, well, we're 15 years old as a city, and that was maybe 3 years, 4 years, Richard, into our city's history. So that was 10, 11 years ago that we made a major expenditure to acquire the utility, to protect ourselves, and then we spent the next several years catching up on R&R, renewal and replacement. So you have that debt service that we took to protect ourselves and protect our interest. We're paying it off, and to Mr. Nobile's point, the sooner we can pay it off, the better. Rob, what is the term of this SRF loan?
I was going to mention that. David took my shoulder. The term is 20 years when you start paying it off.
So it's not a 30-year loan.
It's not a 30-year loan, so it's shorter. So that kind of helps you over time. You're not doing a 30, 40. We have a client, or not our client, but we have a utility that we know of in Washington who's building these giant stormwater tunnels. They just issued century bonds. 100-year life. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. But these are 20-year bonds. So that's a benefit as well, that this life, useful life of this asset will extend way beyond 20 years. The other point I want to make to what the mayor said, there's something different with public ownership to private ownership. And he kind of alluded to it, but I wanted to kind of compliment and add to that. But the fact is, the money stays here. All your capital reinvestment, those are dollars that stay here. Private, that usually leaves. If they can find a better rate of return somewhere and not do the improvements here, that's what they do. And if you think about it, and you look at the condition of your system physically, financially, with what the city's done and what Chris has done, and where you are with your bond rating, which is stronger today than it was when we went to the market, as you well know, It's all a very positive thing to talk about, and I totally agree. I remember that
very well. We had some very tense moments.
Yes, we did. Very tense moments. And I remember the decision you all made at that time. I was here.
This SRF loan doesn't require any payment to be made until after the utility comes online. Is that correct?
Facility improvement comes online, yes, okay. In 3 years. And you can draw on that as you see fit relative to the amount they approve.
Okay.
Which is another benefit because it allows you to grow into that debt service payment over time, plus the interest rate's so low anyway. But it's a better match of dollars to growth to financing, and it limits your risk.
Your Honor, I call the question.
Well, before we do that, we need to open the meeting to the public, I believe. We have two items, 8 and 9, the facilities plan and the capital financing plan. I will accept comments on either or both. We will deal with them individually, but anyone wish to be heard on agenda items 8 or 9? Seeing no one approach the podium, back to council. Mr. McGuire, you offered a motion to approve agenda item number 8.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second it.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries out. Objection.
Can I just say that they probably, all the blue shirts out here, went through the Citizens Academy, and it was explained so well in the Citizens Academy that they get a lot of it. You know, they understand a lot of what we're talking about.
When it's I was like a school teacher, I know a lot of people learn by repetition, so we're sorry for the reiteration. Okay, we passed agenda item number 8.
Better that than listening to Heidi saying, I'm a little teapot.
Oh, no.
Oh, I thought you were going to bring that up. Yeah. Agenda item number 9, I'm sorry. Do you need to read this one for me?
No.
It's a resolution. Okay. Questions on number 9. This is the financing plan. We've already had the discussion. In fact, most of our discussion was on the finance, not on the pipes and the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Any additional questions on number 9? Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 9? Seeing no one approach the podium, come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Move and second it. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 10. This is what the blue shirts have been waiting for. Graduation from this session of the Palm Coast Citizens Academy. Cindy?
Good evening. Mr. Mayor, are you going to join me and help with this? So tonight we're here to celebrate the graduation of the 33rd Citizens Academy of the City of Palm Coast. And we had an unusual class this time in that in the middle of our Citizens Academy, we had a reorganization. And so they've learned a lot through this and also have been very patient and good students to getting used to the new way while still hearing about the old way, which isn't that much different, just some few new faces. We had the honor of having Councilmember Shipley in our class with her husband. Do you want to put your blue shirt on and join us?
I have it to hold up.
I think that would be acceptable.
All right. So I think we're going to get started, and I'll skip to the S's, and we'll start from there. Oh, well, she's going to sit. So we'll start at the beginning then. Okay, so the way it's going to work is when I call your name, if you'll come up and receive your certificate from the mayor, and then form a line in the front here or a couple of lines, and then we'll do a group shot at the end, a group photo.
Graduation.
Yes, so our first graduate is Stephen Anezik. Carol Downs. Helen Dreeser. Edward Heidelbach. Gordon Heritage. Eileen Hibbert. Lorelei Holloway. Lloyd Hyman. Maxine Hyman. George Kalias wasn't able to be here tonight. Donald LeBrun. Katie Linhart. We have an honorary graduate there. So. Yeah. Marilyn Paris. Marie Sarsfield. Heidi Shipley. And she really.
What I said about the journey is just beginning.
Marvin Shipley. And I will say the Shipleys did an excellent job with I'm a Little Teapot when they were late last night. That's a little video. Requirement that Chief has, so take note if you take the class in the future. Mary Ann Silbert. And Gary Silbert. Sherry Snyder. Joel Saint-Amand. You know, it's funny because I should apologize in advance about the names, but I really call all of you by your first names, so I don't learn your last names as well as I should. So. Elaine Studnicki. Now see, right then I got Elaine's first name wrong. Zdenka Stolth. And Stephen Walker. So congratulations to all of you. And what I need you to do now is form into about three rows.
Short people.
Make yourselves. Arrange yourselves. And if the council can join, we'll have a photo of the whole group. I should have stated, too, that quite a few of the people this time joined Citizens Academy as friends, but I think by the end of it, all of us are leaving as friends.
Oh,
God. No, right? Oh, no.
I'm going to have to say that that's a lie. I would like to say the My Little Teapot thing is a rumor.
I saw the video.
I'd like to say that.
Would you like to see the replay?
Okay. Well, I think we can put that on YouTube, can't we?
I just want to point out that this is our 33rd Citizens Academy. That means if you take the number of students that we had times 33, that's a population that is going beyond just being a resident here. They're taking an active part in their community. They're learning about their government. And an educated citizenry is the strongest, most effective tool you've got for good growth. Okay. This brings us to the consent agenda, items 11 through 13. I'd like to offer the opportunity from anyone from the audience who'd like to speak on any of the items 11 through 13. This is your opportunity. Otherwise, council may or may not remove items for discussion and may or may not approve them as a group. Anyone wish to speak on items 11 through 13? Seeing no one approach the podium, come back to council. Motion on the consent agenda.
Your Honor, item number 13 needs to be pulled. That was not discussed at the workshop. That was deferred to the next workshop.
Pull item number 13. Is there a motion on items 11 and 12?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item 13. Mr. Landon.
Well, Mayor, City Council, we had a comprehensive presentation we were going to provide City Council, and we'll do it at your next workshop, about our workforce talent goal that City Council has. One of those was two things that we focus in on this year, customer service training and also management supervisory training. Something that's been a priority of ours for a few years. And we have a contract proposal on item number 13 with Daytona State College to provide those two training sessions to customer service, all employees, management, supervisory training to those that do exactly that, supervise employees. The total cost for both of them is approximately $37,000. We have received a grant from the state for $27,000 to cover a majority of this cost. So we'll be reimbursed from the state. Bo, is it help me out with the agency? So the comprehensive presentation you'll see. This is only one small portion of that. And we're already trying to move forward with this, so we're asking that you go ahead and approve this expenditure tonight. Typically, you don't approve it, but because we're doing this in a comprehensive fashion, it's over the $30,000 threshold that I don't have authority to approve. Bo, can you fill in some
details?
Sure.
The grant is through CareerSource Flagler Volusia, one of our partners at the BAC, provides funding for employee training. We started with the management training. It's already underway. It was under $30,000, so we started with that. When we added the customer service training, that put us over the $30,000 mark. At $37,000, as Mr. Landon stated, we do have a grant to pay for the management training. So it's a reimbursement grant, so the money's paid out and then reimbursed by CareerSource Flagler Volusia.
Council questions? Since this item was removed from the consent agenda, does anyone wish to speak on agenda item number 13? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion. We'll be back to council. Is there a motion on agenda item number 13?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
No.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 3-1.
Thank you very much. This brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item that's not on the agenda. This is your opportunity to talk about whatever you like. Come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. I tell you, I wish to say that the guy or the people who put together the website, City Hall Progress, excellent. And I'm telling you, I when I got on it, and I tell people about it, and this is for people who are looking in. All you have to, if you have a computer or you go to the library and you punch in palmcoastgov.com/city-hall, and then you come down and you hit the big, there's a big thing of the site, of the walls going up. Hit it and wait for it to boot up. And I'll tell you, it is a sight to see guys, people, like the walls coming up like Lazarus, rising. I'm telling you, it really is something. Really, really is something. So my compliments to everybody who had anything to do with this, and incidentally, it was my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Jack Cattle, Palm Coast. I want to, you know, everybody talks about the red light system we have. And I was driving in, and a thought occurred to me. People oppose the red light cameras for various reasons. But I figured it's the main reason would be if a guy goes through a red light, has an accident, right? He has no alibi. He can't say, well, you know, I didn't do it. So I figured that's the reason why a lot of these people would like to get rid of the red light cameras, because it's like a witness against them. So I would consider that, you know, when you start to make your reductions in the cameras. I don't know if you have to, if it's a law, but if you don't have to, don't do it. I believe in it, and I believe it's saving lives, and I believe it's the reckless driver that's the complainer.
Thank you. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. Kudos for the website that shows the progress of City Hall. I understand we're on schedule.
Yep, very
good.
Much so.
Good. It's okay. This brings a discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Ms. Shipley, we'll start with you.
The only thing I want to just bring up again is Florida Park Drive. I just want to know if there's any progress. I know we had someone that gave us a new suggestion of left turn only at one of the meetings, and I have to keep on updating them and letting them know that I'm still working on it. So has there been any?
We at the request of City Council, we are attempting to engage a traffic engineering firm to come and give us recommendations, evaluate possible impacts if we make changes. So we're going through our procurement process where we've requested proposals of the three firms that we have a continuous service contract. When we get those three proposals, we'll be making a presentation. City Council decide whether or not you want to proceed in that fashion after you see the cost and what they're proposing. And I don't have a time. I didn't come prepared with a time frame, but it should be, you know, within the next 30 days or so.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it. Mr. Nobile. Mr. Wire. Chief, are you planning to talk a little bit about the Remembrance Project? I think it'd be worthwhile for you to just tell people why that big truck is out there. Yeah, that was a mistake.
What did you say? He's got my back. Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I would say a few words out front this evening as everybody came in. There is a very large fire truck from the city of New York known as Rescue 4, housed out of Brooklyn, New York, and it responded to the World Trade Center. There's a group known as the Remembrance Project that has bought that vehicle as well as one that's housed in Chicago and handles the west coast of the country, and it goes around. And what it's designed to do is to bring attention to the events of September 11th and the tragedy that the New York City Fire Department and we in the fire service and Americans in general suffered that day. It's a static display. Fortunately, I guess, as a firefighter, we're allowed to go inside it and look at it. Just kind of gives you an eerie feeling knowing that some of our brothers worked on that truck that day and never came home. I encourage everybody to get out and see it. It'll be in town all week. It's
gonna Where are the locations?
It will be at the Elks Club, I know, on Thursday. Other than that, I don't remember where exactly it's going to be, other than I knew it was going to be here tonight. I believe it was in the Observer, and it might be where Cindy. I don't know if we still have it.
Let's put it up on the website.
I think we have a flyer. It might be up there. That's why I want to see if Cindy was here to just get out and see it and remember what happened all those years ago. We realized that a lot of our kids were just that, children, and they don't recall those events. So thank you, Mr. Mayor, for bringing that up, and I hope everybody can come out and see it with us. Thank you.
Talk about having your back.
12 years.
I don't know why.
We just talked about
this. They left off discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Your fire chief's not done yet.
Yeah.
You invited him, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, you gave me open mic. It's like karaoke now, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Nobile told me to click the counter, so.
Click the counter. Tomorrow, Wednesday, March 4th, it will be at Fire Station 25 from 10 to 2. Thursday, as I said, the Palm Coast Elks Club. At the Elks Club is the retired FDNY monthly meeting, and there will be bagpipes there if anybody's interested in hearing the bagpipers play. And then Friday.
The time at the Elks Club, please.
The Elks is 10 to 2 on Old Kings Road North. We'll have it set up in the parking area. And then Friday, March 6th, looks like noon, 9 a.m. to noon, again at Fire Station number 25. I know the schedule's changed a little bit. I know it's going back out on the road. It's going to bike week for next week, so it'll be down in Daytona, too, if anybody's interested.
Encourage everybody to come out and help remember people who gave their lives for our communities, for the New York community.
Thank you.
Okay, discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I can only surmise that this is punishment for talking too much at the last workshop, but it's been a long evening. I have nothing further.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
I would just comment that the rest of our capital projects are moving along on schedule also. Palm Coast Parkway six laning also has a separate website that updates people and they can see the progress, and that's coming along very nicely at this point. You can find that on our website too with a separate icon that also I think has done very an excellent job to keep people updated. Mayor, other than that, I don't have anything further.
Mr. Vice Mayor?
Move to adjourn.
We stand adjourned. Thank you all for your participation.